Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
We welcome you into a brand new week on a Monday. It's time for a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. We have you for just an hour today. We get done a little early. We've got the SLU Billikens Coaches Show this evening from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Big show. It's going to be the tandem of men's basketball coach Josh Schertz and women's basketball coach Rebecca Tillett. So those two are going to be on with Bob Ramsey from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock this evening. So I've got you up until then. We got a few things to get to. From a baseball standpoint, not a whole lot has changed since Friday. You know, we were doing this show on Friday right as the Ryan Pressly stuff was really seeming to kind of pick up. And as he heads to the Cubs and all right, I don't know, they haven't officially announced it yet, but all indications are this thing is going to happen. They're going through medical reviews and everything. Houston is sending some money to help cover some of his $14 million salary, but Houston is getting some salary relief here. Maybe. That impacts the Nolan Arenado situation because maybe that results in Alex Bregman going back to Houston. I don't know. Like we're grasping at things at this point, just waiting for, you know, one of two things has to happen. Either spring training has to begin, which we're about two weeks from today is the day I travel to Jupiter. I'm going in day after the Super Bowl on February 10th. So, I mean, it is just about here. So that's coming up, and so either that has to happen in 2 weeks or the Bregman signing has to happen, and then other things can start going down. I don't think that the Nolan Arenado deal can get done without Bregman signing somewhere, and I think the bigger question is if Bregman ends up going to the Red Sox, which right now I feel like the Astros are going to come back in and swoop him up. There's too much kind of going on there. When Jose Altuve is a leader on your team, says, you know what, I'll go play left field. Get this guy back, please. When that happens and you're this late in free agency, it just seems like that's the thing that's going to end up happening. And I could obviously be wrong on that one. The team that's probably got the most financial power is the Boston Red Sox. If they decide they want to up the deal a little bit, they could just go probably sign him at any moment. But there continues to be issues with how long Bregman wants his contract to be and then the annual average value that goes along with the length of contract. If he wants to shorten up the contract, he can probably make a little bit more money, but he wants the high AAV and the longer salary, which is what everybody wants, right? That's the goal. When you go into free agency, make as much money as you can for as long as you can. You do that, you got yourself a pretty solid contract, and that's what he's trying to get. I don't know. We were talking about this on the Gas House Gang today. I think Kevin Wheeler brought it up, so you'll hear that coming up later on this evening. But you know, Kevin mentioned the fact that there'd been some rumblings out there that maybe the Cardinals are changing their approach in terms of what they want back for Arenado, because for a while it seemed like they wanted to make sure that they got salary relief, that they could go get a team to pick up as much of his salary left as possible. That's why when the Astros are going to pick up all but about $20 million of it, that was something that the Cardinals were comfortable with, and they don't seem to be too overly worried about what the return is going to be for Arenado, if as long as they are able to, you know, get major salary relief. There's been some reports out there that the mindset on that might be shifting, where the Cardinals will be willing to pick up more of the salary as long as they can get more of a return back. And if that is the case, does that mean some of these teams that had previously been out might come back in? Maybe. We just have to wait on that one and see. I did think it was interesting. There was a story, I think it ran over the weekend in the Post-Dispatch and STL Today, where John Mozeliak basically kind of confirmed what we had been talking about a lot, that they're trying not to put too many long-term deals on the books beyond this year, and long-term is even a two-year deal. That way, Heim Bloom and his team can have as much of a clean slate as possible coming in. Now, obviously, there are some guys who are under contract beyond this year, and there's nothing you can do about that. But I said it when Brendan Donovan did not agree to a deal prior to the numbers being exchanged and en route to arbitration. There had been some reporting out there that there had been some discussion with Donovan about a two-year deal, possibly. And I would guess that that is still something that could happen. And Heim Bloom is always one phone call away. And you can say, hey, if we've got this set up with Brendan Donovan, it's going to take him through next year. You good with that? Yeah, I'm good with that. Okay, we'll go work on that. Like, that can still obviously happen, but it continues to kind of sit in the back of my mind that they are trying to avoid contracts that go beyond 2025 just to get give Bloom, again, as much of that just clean, open canvas to work on the team as he can. So that's one thing. Hockey tonight, Blues are in action as they've got a game against the Canucks this evening. That's a big one for them as they continue to battle for a playoff spot. Scott Perunovic was traded today. He goes to the New York Islanders in exchange for a conditional 2026 fifth round pick. So Perunovic, who hadn't played a lot recently, he'd been scratched for the last 9 games. He's dealt with injuries throughout his career. He just did not have a pathway to playing time in St. Louis, so they're able to move on from him and at least get something back from him. So that's one thing. And then from a football perspective, obviously, the Super Bowl matchup is set with the Eagles and the Chiefs. Chiefs beat the Bills again yesterday. They win 32-29, and that was just the Chiefs finding a way to win a low-scoring, one-score kind of game. They have done that all season long, and now once again, the Chiefs are headed to the Super Bowl looking for a three-peat. It would be the first time any team has ever won 3 Super Bowls in a row. It's been misreported. Teams have won 3 championships around in the pre-Super Bowl era. The Green Bay Packers did it twice. They did it once in the 20s, and then they did it another time where they won the first 2 Super Bowls. That was championships 2 and 3. The final year before the Super Bowl, the Packers won and won as well. So if the Chiefs were to do it, it wouldn't be technically the first three-peat in terms of championship. When the Packers did it, like in the 20s, there wasn't even a playoff. It was just based off a regular season record. So there has been teams that have won the championship 3 years in a row, but no team has ever won the Super Bowl 3 years in a row. Blair Kirkhoff from the Kansas City Star, he's going to join us in just a moment. What did he think about the way things went down yesterday for the Chiefs? He joins us in just a moment as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line in a moment here on KMOX. Well, not only are the Kansas City Chiefs once again headed to the Super Bowl, they once again ended the season for the Buffalo Bills in the postseason. Welcome back in. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Thank you so much for being tuned in with us. Of course, we are your home for the Kansas City Chiefs in St. Louis, and we're very happy right now to welcome on a sports writer with the Kansas City Star. He is Blair Kirkhoff. You follow him on Twitter at Blair Kirkhoff, KerkhoffF. How you spell the last name. Blair, thanks so much for rejoining us on the program. We always appreciate you taking some time. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on, Matt.
Hey, are you a little bummed by the fact that it was a really, really good game and it's this amazing, the Chiefs are doing these amazing things, and unfortunately, from a national standpoint, the overwhelming narrative is about the officiating in the game?
It's interesting from our perspective. There's a bubble around Kansas City when it comes to that, and I know the fans and have taken to social media to fight back on that perception. I think that the more thoughtful commentators that I'm seeing are you know, given the Chiefs their due, which they obviously deserve. The one that surprised me a little bit was the Adam Schefter tweet from last week, when it kind of insinuated that you know, the NFL are just going to have to fix this roughing the passer rule because the Chiefs seem to take advantage of it more than other teams, or they get at least they get favorable calls. That was the one that surprised me a little bit, just because of the, you know, he's a respected, you know, journalist at ESPN. But, you know, the most of the serious commentary I've seen has been just, you know, more of a, you know, an appreciation and an awe of what the Chiefs are doing.
One thing that does come out of this, because it was once again whether or not there was a first down or not, it brought back into kind of the overwhelming narrative that maybe there is a better way than the way they're doing it right now, whether it's using laser technology, whether there's chips in the football, like whatever it might be. There has to be a better way to determine where the football gets to on a play like that.
Absolutely. No, I agree. And hopefully that technology is coming. In fact, we were told in the preseason this year that the NFL was pretty close to that technology. And one of the ways it was going to be used was when punts sail out of bounds. You could have a very accurate, you know, placing of the ball. You know how you'll see an official walk up the sideline when a punt sails out of bounds, and you're thinking, how does he know? You know, he's walking 10, 12 yards, and the chip was supposed to fix that. So I thought we were closer to it than what we are. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people suggest, look, if they can, you know, if you can put him on a tennis ball and have the, you know, the in-out call, why can't you put him in a football? So maybe that's close. We need something like that. I don't know if you can tell from any of the replays whether the call could have been overturned, but it was obviously a very big moment in the game.
Yeah. Look, the in St. Louis, we're a UFL town. We love the Battle Hawks here, and they've got some technology that they use in that league on first down. So I don't know if it's ready for prime time. I can't speak enough to that. And you mentioned the tennis technology that exists. It feels like if this was a priority, they could get it done.
Yeah, like I said, we every preseason the folks that cover the Chiefs, we get visited in training camp by officials, officials that come and work training camp and, you know, call scrimmages, that sort of thing. And I was kind of left with the impression that was going to happen this year. Hadn't happened,
no.
And that's a shame, because it would have. Again, I don't, all the angles, including the drone site, you know, the angle, you just could not tell. You didn't know where the ball was. You didn't know where the ball was in Josh Allen's arm. So that was the big issue there for me.
Blair Kirkhoff continuing to join us. Okay, let's actually talk football, because that's what really matters here. Once again, Chiefs get the ball with a few minutes left, tie game. And, I mean, everybody knew that they were going to score. Now, they scored fast, so all of a sudden their defense had to come on the field and win the game. But it has just become almost this foregone conclusion that if the Chiefs have an opportunity to go ahead late, they're going to do so.
It's amazing. That may be, of all the streaks and achievements and accomplishments and everything that's come out of, you know, this run that the Chiefs are on this year, you know, the opportunity to three-peat and seven straight conference championship game appearances, et cetera. The one to me that's most mind-boggling is the consecutive victories in one-score games, which I think is up to 17 now, dating back to last Christmas, when they lost to the Raiders at home on Christmas Day, and they won 17 straight one-score games. And then Patrick Mahomes' numbers when trailing in the fourth quarter are just spectacular. I mean, yeah, I think he's the only quarterback in history whose team has a better than 500 record when trailing at some point in the fourth quarter. So they're never out of it. I thought twice the Bills had an opportunity to win the game, right? They came back from 21-10 down to take a 22-21 lead, and and then they had the ball, and that's when the fourth down play happened. And then after the and then they tied it at 29, and Chiefs got the field goal, and the Bills, you got Josh Allen on the field with that Bills offense with plenty of time. And I thought, you know, at least they're going to get this thing tied and put into overtime, but didn't happen. Chiefs defense stood up. So that was the kind of game it was, back and forth. Two great teams, the top two seeds in the AFC going after each other. Years of frustration having mounted for the Bills, but Chiefs found a way once again.
And holy mo, I've long said, Blair, that the Chiefs have the best tandem at the top in terms of who leads the offense from a coaching standpoint and who leads the defense from a coaching staff with Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo. And no disrespect to what the offense did and what Andy Reid did, but what a coaching performance from Steve Spagnuolo, especially late with the different blitzes that he was able to draw up and keeping Buffalo it felt like at times they did not know where it was coming from. That was a masterclass of coaching from Spags.
Yeah, it was a great job. And I read some I didn't hear this directly after the game. I heard it this morning that a couple of Bills players, offensive linemen, were describing why they shifted their protection the way they did is because of the look that the Chiefs had been showing the entire game and without blitzing. And then they showed that look again. Bills didn't think they'd be coming from the left side. And lo and behold, Justin Reed and Trent McDuffie came from the left side and put the pressure on Josh Allen to throw the pass off his back foot. And you know, credit to Josh Allen. It should have been completed.
Yeah.
The ball to Dalton Kincaid. That was a catchable ball. It was obviously not the pass they wanted to throw, but he was there and just good fortune smile on the Chiefs right then that he didn't catch it. But if he catches it, they're close to field goal range. They're only a couple plays away from field goal range at least. And we know what heck they might have. There's plenty of time left and might have put it in the end zone the way the Bills offense had gone at times last night.
One of the most odd things about this series over the last few years is how Buffalo has dominated in the regular season and the Chiefs have dominated in the postseason. Is there any rhyme or reason to why the series has played out that way?
Yeah, I can't figure it out. I think you touched on it a moment ago. First of all, the regular season thing, the Bills have won three straight games at Arrowhead in the regular season. They don't just do it in Buffalo like they did this year. They also do it in Kansas City. So they came in without any fear or concern about the environment or Arrowhead, the noise. They've handled that before. I just think that when it comes down to it, in Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo, the coaches, and then Patrick Mahomes at the critical junctures of close games, they have made the plays. And doesn't matter where. They did it in Buffalo last year and at Baltimore in the AFC title game, obviously in the Super Bowl against the 49ers, the previous Super Bowl against the Philadelphia Eagles and the AFC title game against the Bengals. It's just it's uncanny and unmatched in recent NFL history here. So I just think they have an edge at coach and quarterback that other teams don't. And I think that's what gives them the advantage in the close ones.
I really like this Super Bowl matchup because I feel like there's a lot of best on best. Kansas City's got the best coach, the best quarterback, probably the best coaching staff. Philadelphia probably has the best overall roster in the NFL. They're the best in terms of using analytics and looking at football in a unique way, a little bit differently than other teams do. Like, there's a lot of things that each of these organizations do incredibly well, and now they match up in the Super Bowl. Do you like this matchup? Do you kind of see it the way I see it?
I do like the matchup. I think in terms of I remember when the seedings took shape. You know, 3 weeks ago, I thought that the best possible game was going to be Kansas City and Philadelphia. I thought at the time the Lions, just too many injuries to come through, and that proved to be the case. And I think if the Commanders had gotten there, I think the moment might have been too big for them. And it seemed to be in the NFC Championship game. Eagles have been there, done that. Their coach and quarterback have been there, done that. They've added Saquon Barkley, who's just a bringing back the running back position in a major way. Their defense can be really good. So yeah, it's going to be fun to write about it all next week and to watch it unfold in the Superdome. I'm excited for this one. I think it was the best possible matchup when the playoffs started.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Blair Kirchhoff, he covers the Chiefs, all things Kansas City for the Kansas City Star, at Blair Kirchhoff on Twitter. Blair, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Enjoy the couple weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep, will do. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. There's Blair Kirchhoff joining us on the program. I'll take a break and come back. We'll talk a little bit more about yesterday and the way things went down and some of the complaints that are out there as well. That's up next. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Appreciate you being with us. Have you for just 23 more minutes. We are done early tonight because we've got the SLU Billikens Coaches Show. Bob Ramsey will be hosting this evening as we've got both basketball coaches on tonight, men's basketball coach Josh Schertz and women's basketball coach Rebecca Tillett are both going to be on, and that's going to be from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And a reminder for you, it is at its new home. It moved homes last week. It is back there tonight, Westport Social, right there at Westport Plaza. If you've never been there, that's a really cool place to be able to enjoy yourself. In the release, the Billikens note that Westport Social does have a rule that patrons do have to be 21 years of age or older to enter after 4 o'clock, and it's 6:38. So if you've got the family in the station wagon ready to go to the coaches show, you might be a little bit out of luck, but you just camp around the radio at home and you listen in. So we've been talking a fair amount about what happened yesterday in the NFL. By the way, this isn't a pat myself on the back moment because I get things wrong a lot, and I have no problem telling you when I get things wrong. This is one of the times I got it right. I thought the Eagles were going to just roll over the Commanders, and that happened. And I thought the Chiefs would win close, and that ended up happening as well. So for one time in however many attempts, I got something right. But I thought that game between the Chiefs and Bills was really good. And this is why I asked that first question to Blair Kirchhoff. It frustrates me a little bit that there's so much focus on the officiating. And you know what? If I'm being very honest, in all likelihood, that was probably a first down for Buffalo. The ball probably went over. But it's not a for sure thing. And yeah, you get on social media, and depending on, you know, it's all kind of agenda-based posting. Depending on what side you're on, you can post a picture on social media that can make a really convincing argument that it was a first down. For every photo or piece of video or whatever that I've seen that makes it look like clearly it was a first down, I've seen just as many that clearly make it look like it wasn't a first down. And like I mentioned with Blair, hopefully that can be the impetus to having change and actually using technology in the game. And look, it's not super easy. There are challenges that even if you have, you know, a chip in the tip of the football, or, you know, covering the entire football or whatever. Like, there's going to be challenges with that. You have to know when a player's knee hits the ground and at one point. Like, there's just a lot of stuff there. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's going to be easy for them to implement technology to determine first downs. But I'm going to tell you they can do it. I'm going to tell you if they were really committed to it, it's something that they could have done. And I would assume that right now it is better than the eye test that we're seeing. It's kind of what I talk about with the automated strike zone. You know when I want the automated strike zone to take over in Major League Baseball? I want it to take over the moment it has a higher percentage of getting calls correct than human umpires. And, you know, going back a year plus, and I don't know if this is still true right now, but going back a year plus, I heard a lot of reporting that the feeling was they had not perfected the automated strike zone yet to a point where it was going to be more correct than umpires, which I think is kind of silly, by the way. It doesn't seem like it should be that hard, but what do I know? I'm a I talk on the radio. I'm not any type of, you know, electrical engineer or anything like that. But that's the moment that there is clear evidence that the automated strike zone in baseball gets calls correct at a higher percentage than major league umpires, you make the switch right then. You don't test it out. Like, you just go. You just go because it's better. And that's what I would say. I would apply the exact same standard to this situation. The moment you feel like you have technology that is better than the officials spotting the ball the way that they currently do, you go to it. Because the idea is to get more calls correct more often. No matter what the sport is, no matter what the situation is, I'm always going to come back to that. Whatever you have to do to get more calls correct more often, of course, within a you know, it can't be something where every single play is being reviewed and you're taking a moment. There has to be a real-time aspect to it. You do it. You figure it out. And you go with it moving forward. So that, of everything that happened in yesterday's game, I hope that that can turn into something. I don't buy the idea that the NFL has it rigged for the Chiefs. That's what everybody says. Oh, the NFL's got it rigged for the Chiefs. Now, do I think that Patrick Mahomes might get some calls that other quarterbacks in the NFL, including a quarterback who's also on a Hall of Fame trajectory like Josh Allen, do I think there's a possibility that Patrick Mahomes can get some calls that other guys don't get just because of his reputation? Yeah, I think that's possible. I think there's a lot of pressure on these NFL officials to make sure that they are protecting the quarterback and protecting the most high-profile of quarterbacks. It's why I think when you have mobile quarterbacks, they don't get the calls that some of the pocket passers end up getting because officials just view them in a different way, almost viewing them more like they're running backs than they are quarterbacks. So no, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that all quarterbacks get the exact same calls. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Patrick Mahomes doesn't occasionally get a call that other quarterbacks don't get. But is there any sort of conspiracy going on to get Kansas City to the Super Bowl? No, of course not. That's silly. That is absolutely silly talk. People, let it be known that it took me until 6:44 p.m. to mention her name. But people always talk about the Taylor Swift thing and how, you know, the TV ratings are going to be higher because the Swifties are all in on the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, that's a nice thing for the NFL. Is there some internal rooting in the NFL offices or at the office? Who has the, is it Fox? I think Fox has the Super Bowl this year. Is there some internal rooting from the good old TV executives at Fox hoping that the Chiefs make it because they get to have the Swifties watching? Maybe that might be a thing. I don't know how much of a impact that actually has. I've seen some people out there predicting a low rated Super Bowl because of the teams that are involved, because of the general dislike for those teams. We'll see. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Super Bowl, I think, you know, the Chiefs have become a team that everybody pays attention to, whether you like them or not. And by the way, you don't like the Chiefs, that's fine. Like, I understand it. You don't like the Eagles, that's fine. I understand it. I understand the fatigue of the same teams being in there over and over and over again. And if you want to see more teams getting their shot at a championship and you'd rather not see the Chiefs in there every single year, okay. I'm not mad at you for that, but if you're somebody who really appreciates greatness and likes dynasties and likes to see something that I was about to say that you don't see that often, but you know, you went from the Patriots dynasty to the Chiefs dynasty very quickly. I mean, it's you look at the last like 25 Super Bowls and the percentage of Super Bowls that either have the Patriots or the Chiefs in there, it's a very high number. But if you are somebody that appreciates that you do want to see dynasties, that's okay too. I understand both sides of it for sure. I get why you would feel each of those ways. But to think that there's some sort of conspiracy going on in the National Football League where officials are being instructed to give calls to the Chiefs because the NFL wants the Chiefs in there, that's not true. That's just not happening. And again, I realize that there is the Taylor Swift aspect to this, but if the NFL were to say, okay, we want to create a Super Bowl that has the most amount of viewers. We want to create a team that we're going to make sure gets every opportunity to push forward. They're not choosing the Kansas City Chiefs. They're not choosing the team in market number whatever. You're choosing a team from New York, or you're choosing a team, not really in LA because the local interest in that, we know how that is, but you're choosing a team in New York, or you're choosing a team in Chicago, or you're choosing a team in one of these big markets. You're not choosing the team in Kansas City. So I do think we need to take a step back at times and just say, yeah, there's an occasion that the Chiefs get calls. There's no conspiracy going on. That's what happens when you're a really good team. Things go in your favor. It's always happened in sports. I made the comparison earlier today when we were doing the Gas House Gang. What's really the difference between Patrick Mahomes maybe getting a call and Greg Maddux getting a strike that's well off the plate? It happens. When you are the best of the best, you get those calls, and that's the way things end up going down. So I'm excited for the Super Bowl. I said it earlier. I think the world of the Eagles organization in the way that they do things, I don't think Nick Sirianni is an especially good head coach. Jalen Hurts he's fine. He's not a great quarterback by any stretch of the mind. But you can look at that Eagles roster and you can make the argument that it is perhaps the best overall roster in the NFL. And you go look at the decisions that are made by the Eagles front office and their football operations, and you can see a team that does things at a really high elite level. I mean, the Eagles are really good at roster building. They're really good at looking at football in a unique way that's productive, that's good. Sometimes you see teams look at things in a unique way and it's terrible. That's not the Eagles. And like we've talked about, for the Chiefs, you've got the best head coach in the NFL. You've got the best defensive coordinator in the NFL. And if they're not the best, they're the best tandem. That to have those two guys and Reed and Spagnuolo working together and running the offense and defense together, no team has that level at those two spots combined. And then you got one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in the NFL, and in Patrick Mahomes, a guy who just finds way to win. And when you sit there and you know you're Kansas City, you got the ball late, it's a tie situation, or you're down by less than a touchdown, you just know they're going to score. They're going to score. It is a foregone conclusion at this point that they are going to score. One other note, the Blues game is underway. Not so great news, as Vancouver has taken a 1-0 lead 3 minutes in. There's been a lot of focus here recently on the Blues on trying to get better starts, and it didn't happen tonight because you're 3 minutes in and you're down by a 1-0 score. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up this edition of the program. We're done early today because we've got a Slu Bilkins coaches show. That's going to be beginning after the 7 o'clock news. I'll wrap up this edition of a Gray Bar Sports Open Line in just a moment here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Just a few minutes left in the program. Had to chuckle at this one today. Dylan Carlson and Tyler O'Neill, they have been reunited playing for a team that has a bird mascot. How about that? So the Baltimore Orioles today, they have agreed to terms with Dylan Carlson. He gets a one-year contract. He's not even going to make $1 million. He signed a contract at $975,000. He was non-tendered by the Rays. So he had some moments with the Rays, but his overall numbers when he got to Tampa, they weren't good. He hit for a little bit more power, which isn't saying much because he hit for no power with the Cardinals last year. He had a little bit more power once he got to the Rays last year. And again, he had a couple moments, but overall the numbers were not especially good. Between Cardinals and Rays last year, 209, 3 home runs, 25 RBIs. He still played in 96 games. I don't know how much playing time he's going to get there. So you've got really four guys in front of him, including O'Neill, and you can go from there. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. He does get a $25,000 bonus if he gets 200 plate appearances. So if he gets the 200 plate appearances, he'll make a cool $1 million this year with the Orioles. But Carlson and O'Neill back together with the Baltimore Orioles. We'll see how that all ends up playing out. You root for the guy. I root for him. I root for O'Neill. Any of these guys who are former Cardinals who it just didn't completely work out, you hope that they can find themselves. I mean, you think about the promise of Carlson being a first-round draft pick, hit those 18 home runs in 2021. You really thought this guy was going to turn into something. And then a combination of, you know, injuries impacted him. I think his ability to his legs always look tiny to me. And I hate talking about guys' bodies. Like, that's just not really, I don't, like, you as an athlete, you do really impressive things with what you've got going for you. But it felt like he had a hard time adding on the bulk that maybe you wanted him to add on, kind of the opposite of Tyler O'Neill in that situation. So we'll see what happens with Carlson there in Baltimore, see if he ends up getting on track. That's just about going to do it for this edition of the program, because we've got the Slew Bilkins Coaches Show coming up from Westport Social. Tonight, it's both men's basketball coach Josh Schertz and women's basketball coach Rebecca Tillett. That's going to begin just after the 7 o'clock news. I'll talk to you tomorrow here on KMOX.